Welcome, everyone, to the Neurodiverse Teacher Podcast. I'm really excited to welcome you all this morning. I have today on my show, I have my special guest, Joe Templin. So welcome, everybody. Welcome, Joe. Joe is the author of Everyday Excellence, A Daily Guide to Growing. Awesome. Love that he's showing it there. So I just want to jump right in, Joe. I want to ask you, tell me a little bit more about Everyday Excellence and your inspiration behind writing that book.
So Everyday Excellence, I describe it as a multivitamin for life, because we all have these different components of our existence, whether it's our physical health, our mental health, our spiritual health, our relationships, our occupation, our nutrition. And none of us are perfect. Let's establish that as the baseline. We're good enough to, as we are, but we can always get better. And so Everyday Excellence is designed to be that 2 or 3 minute quick morning read where we have a quote from somebody, whether it's Dr. Seuss or Muhammad Ali, you know, a whole variety of different things, a little bit of discussion, some guidance there. And the guidance is really meant to be sort of like the Oracle of Delphi, where the individual is going to find what they're looking for in through the guidance. But what separates Everyday Excellence from a lot of the other daily readers out there, like the Daily Stoic or the Daily Laws by Robert Greene, is that there's an action item every single day. And unless you actually do something a little bit different than you normally would, it's all thoughts and prayers, and it's like, oh, that's nice. And, but when you actually take action, it helps crystallize. It brings to fruition the concepts, and it is those micro decisions and micro changes that improve us. And that's the reason for the nonlinear growth curve on the front of it, because if you do something every single day, whether it's working out or practicing the guitar or learning Romanian or what have you, you're going to, over an extended period of time, unlock your own excellence within that.
I really like that. That's interesting. So are you saying that if you're consistent, that's what kind of brings apart or brings about that piece of excellence in an individual? Is that a consistency
Correct.
Piece?
Consistency brings excellence. And an example that I use is, I love donuts, by the way. That's like my one, you know, real vice. So like on International Donut Day, I ate 10 Boston cream donuts. It was my cheat day for the month, though. Normally, I'm incredibly good about my diet. I work out every day and all that. But if you go and you eat like healthy for 4 days out of the week, you're eating salads and all that sort of stuff. But the other 4 days, you're having a half dozen donuts and an entire sleeve of Oreos and all these other things, you're not going to make progress. If you go and run 15 miles one day and then sit on the couch for the rest of the week, and then go run 15 miles the next Saturday, you're not going to see nearly the improvement in your health as you would if you ran 3 or 4 miles every couple of days. It's like just like if you go to martial arts class one day a week and you work for 3 hours, but you don't practice the techniques in the interim, you're not going to see the improvement. So it is this consistency that helps develop the new identity in the mindset. So, you know, the identity of I'm a non-smoker, the identity of I run, I'm a writer, you know, I'm a good parent. You know, you can be a good parent one day a week and a lousy parent the other 6 days, and you're not a good parent.
So is that what you mean when you say micro decisions? Is it the micro decisions that are, so it's not an overwhelming thing? Because I feel like a lot of times people tend to not do those consistency patterns because it feels so overwhelming. It's like people who go, okay, I'm going to finally start eating healthy today. And that is because, and I'm going to get up, I'm going to eat healthy, I'm going to exercise. And it's like they put too much on their plate and then that's why it fails.
Exactly. So as Zeno Saitama, the founder of Stoicism, said, well-being is no small thing, but it's made up of small steps. So you're not going to get up and run 5 miles every single morning. You're not used to that. So you put out the running shoes and your running clothes and get up and go for a walk around the block. Okay. You have 10 minutes earlier than normal, walk for 10 minutes and just establish that habit that you get up a little bit earlier and you do something every single morning. And then you're going to change. And I talk about the micro decisions because we make somewhere around 10,000 decisions every single day. And they're not all these huge things. Okay. A lot of them are very, very tiny. And I'm a big comic book geek, as you can see with my stuff out there. As Colossus tells Deadpool, four or five moments determine if somebody is a hero or a villain. And it's not necessarily that you have superpowers and all this, and it's not these big decisions. It's four or five tiny better choices per day that add up that determine if that day is pointing up or down. And those micro decisions can be as simple as, you know, do I eat the bag of cookies or do I eat an apple? So making the less bad choices we used to talk about in my fraternity. And so one of the things that we realized a while ago is that average person has 50 to 80,000 thoughts a day and most of them are routine. And so if you can change the environment a little bit, you can change the decision making. This is the whole idea behind nudge theory, which was won Thaler the Nobel Prize in economics for behavioral economics, in that you can set up the environment to make slightly better choices. And if you do that, then you don't even have to think about that decision anymore. By default, you're doing something slightly better.
I like that. I'm always looking for, at least in my day-to-day life, those moments that are like, huh, I'd never thought of it like that before. And I hadn't thought about it like that before. And I think what you're doing is you're really taking where I think people get stuck and they have a hard time moving forward. You're giving them, it doesn't have to be all these things all at once. It's so if you can just do it a little bit at a time, you can build that momentum and that's what will help them.
Build the momentum, like it shows on the front of the book with the nonlinear growth curve. It gets easier and easier as the flywheel gets going. And people, some of your listeners might be familiar with James Clear's book, Atomic Habits. And he talks about habit stacking. So, you get up and what do? So I grab my half cup of coffee that's ready to go and I turn on the coffee pot, which was prepped the night before. So your day begins the night before. Anybody who's had a toddler that didn't sleep knows how this feels. So your day begins the night before. So I get up, I grab that cup of coffee, I sit down and I write for a couple minutes. I just brain dump whatever's in my head, get it on out. Then I read every single morning. I read my pages in the book and do that. I read a couple other things. And then I go and I work out for 20 to 30 minutes every single morning. And then I sit down and I write again. Now, is that a real big complex habit stack? No, it starts with getting up, having the coffee and doing these little things. And so I was coaching some young business owners a couple of weeks ago, and they're like telling me about this really complex morning routine that they're gonna get on. I'm like, dude, you're destined to fail. Start by getting up 15 minutes earlier and doing something physical. I don't care what it is, a little bit of calisthenics, go for a walk, light weights, yoga, I don't care. Get up 15 minutes earlier and do something. Start with that, do that for 7 to 10 days. Then you can add something else in. And it's a little bit of the boiling frog theory. You can't just roll off the couch and run 100 kilometers, do an ultra marathon. Now you need to build up to it. Your body needs to get used to it. Your mind gets to get used to it. And so you get up and you do a little bit. And then the next week you do a little bit more and a little bit more. And then all of a sudden you're signing up for races for 5Ks. And then a couple months later, it's 10Ks. And the next year it's half marathons. And then you tackle the marathon. And then 3 years into it, you're like, oh, wow, I'm a runner. I'm going to go run 50 kilometers. And then your friends look at you weird.
But I like that because I think so often when we go, I want to start identifying as this, or I want this to be my new habit. People get overwhelmed. Like you were saying, that person had this very complex process that they were going to do. And you said they're destined to fail. And I think that is what happens to most people is they think it's an all or nothing change. Yes. And they don't realize that it can be done in these small little increments, which would make it much more manageable and could become part of your day if it's done in that format.
Exactly. Make the smallest possible change that's meaningful. And then stick with it until it becomes second nature, and then make the next small change. And if you do that, you'll be like amping it up every single week, roughly. And in 2-3 months, all your friends will be like, hey, what are you doing differently? Because I notice. You might not notice, but other people will notice. And then when you look in the mirror or you assess your skill set or what have you, you'll be like, dang, I'm getting good.
I like that. I like that. It makes it seem much more manageable and not as scary, not as this you're. And I think it's good because you're just, you're giving people permission. I think that's often that people think if they're doing it in a small increment that they're not doing enough. And yeah. You're giving people almost that mental permission that they need to be able to move forward and start making those changes.
As I tell people, just a little bit, no goose eggs. So you can't do nothing for the day. I mean, so people who struggle with anxiety or depression and things like that, okay, do the minimum thing that you can. If getting up out of bed and taking a shower is the minimum you can do that day, that is better than lying in bed.
I like that.
You know, and on your good days, you can accomplish a ton of stuff. But if you've got that consistency of stringing things together every single day where you do the minimum. So that's one of the reasons why I love the Fitbit. So like my minimum daily steps is 16,000. I'm now on 45 days in a row. And 4 days ago, I was at like 15,700 a little bit before bedtime. I'm like, I'm not going to break the streak. Okay. So that was a no goose egg to me. You know, I get up every single morning and I do a basic workout. Even when I was like traveling, okay, I truncated the workout, or I had a back injury last year, I still did part of my workout, the basic martial arts stuff that I did, the same punches every single day because I've done it 10 million plus times. But I had to do it in the shower at 1/10 speed, but I still did something to start moving so that I did not break the streak.
I like that because you're telling people it doesn't have to be all or nothing. As long as you're continuing with something, you're still having that success. You're still meeting that goal that you've set.
So the comedian Jerry Seinfeld had a thing where, you know, and for a while he was like the best comedian on the planet, where he had to write a joke every single day. And he had a calendar and he put an X on it. And, you know, you start seeing the big red X's, you know, line up. And after a couple of weeks, it's your habit of I write a joke every single day, even if it sucks, I still write a joke every single day and you just keep it going. When I was working on writing the book, I got up and I wrote every single morning. I had to write 2 pages, absolute minimum. And so I did that. And even if I trashed 80% of it, I still accomplished what I needed to do. And so what happens is you get the flywheel going essentially, and you build the momentum as you talked about.
Now, do you think it helps? You talked about having the Fitbit. You talked about Jerry Seinfeld having that calendar. Do you think having some kind of visual representation for your introduction of these micro habits, do you think that's important to a person, or do you think that's on an individual?
Everybody needs some sort of feedback mechanism so that they know that they're doing what they need to do. I mean, I'm a huge Yankees fan. They don't play the game and not keep score or in the All-Star game because it doesn't matter there. But they keep score because it matters. So, for example, here's my scorecard for the day. Every single morning when I come into the office, I write down the couple of most important things that I need to do that are not in the calendar. So, like, this is in the calendar because we're doing it at a specific time. But what do I do around that? Well, I need to record a YouTube video. I need to record another one. I need to write this article for somebody. I need to follow up with this person. So that's my list. As I go through the day, I cross them off. And then when I'm all done, I go and I David Letterman it and toss it in the garbage. But I get that feedback mechanism through it. And that helps reduce anxiety because like people get anxiety because they're overwhelmed. They don't know what their next step is in their overall plan. So this is very much like Star Wars, 12% of a plan, but it's good enough to be able to get through the day. If I'm working on a really complex project, yeah, we'll use the project management software and all that sort of stuff. But that's overkill. That's like that young business owner trying to have the super morning stack. You don't need the $15,000 software very often. You know, a set of index cards that cost $1 for 100 is good enough to move you in the right direction most of the time.
I love, can I just say, I love this message because I feel like we all get caught up on this all or nothing that we have to have the latest and greatest. And what you're saying is you can keep it simple and you can still accomplish the things that you want to achieve by keeping it simple. You don't have to have the latest and greatest. You don't have to have it all or nothing. A little bit at a time will help you achieve that. So
the movie City Slickers, it had a critical lesson in there that is totally overlooked. You know, Curly tells Billy Crystal this, the one thing. And when I'm working with a business owner, we look at their entire business and we boil it all down to what's the one thing you need to accomplish every single day, that lever for your business. Mm-hmm. Okay? Is it picking up the phone 20 times a day to call new potential clients and based on your ratios, things come on through? Is it getting 5 introductions every single day? Once we know what that one thing is, then we can build the streak around that. And so for like my friends who are recovering alcoholics, for them, their one thing is get through today. They don't care about next week. They don't care about 2 months down the road. They don't care about what happened even yesterday. Okay. Today, make the right choices. So if they fell off the wagon yesterday, guess what? Today's a new day. We start a new streak. Do what you need to do today. Based on what you need overall. So there's this dichotomy of looking at the big picture, but also focusing on the thing that you can do and control.
I love that. Now, I saw on your website that it looks like people can visit and they can sign up for Everyday Excellence, which looks like it will send them a newsletter or it'll send them a podcast. Can you tell me a little bit more about that and how listeners can benefit
sure.
from that?
So every single day, I have a new microblog that goes up. I call it, you know, an espresso of excellence because it's literally a quick shot, you know, 60 seconds, 90 seconds. And it's based on the theme of the book where I use a quote and discussion and action item. This is a quote, a real short discussion and no action item because I want the reader to just interpret what they need to do for that day. And it's completely free and it's there every single morning. It shows up at about 4:30 Eastern. And each week there's a theme. So 1 week was all about baseball. Another week was all about swimming. Another week was all about pirates because I love pirates. So it's my blog. I can write what I want. It's good to be me. So every single week there is a different underlying theme that after a couple of days you figure out what the theme is. But it's just there as an additional supplement to be able to help people out. I've got a Twitter feed, there's a Facebook group and all this. And these are all different components of what I've realized my real mission is for, or what I'm trying to achieve. Because my mission has always been to help other people, to unlock their excellence, to make them better. But I really want to reach 100 million people over the next 12 months. And I don't care if it's through podcasts like this, which is going to live on the website, by the way, so people will be able to go and find it again in the future. YouTube channel, reading the blog, buying the book, attending a talk that I do. I don't care. I want to be able to positively impact 100 million people because each one of them can then impact 4 or 5 people throughout their day. And then what does that do overall for our society?
I like that. I like that a lot. So you know what? I'm actually going to switch gears a little bit on us because it relates to what you're saying. And I think it moves on because I have a very similar message or mission of reaching individuals. And mine particularly is our youth who happen to be neurodiverse or struggling with mental health needs. And I saw where you also have 2 neurodiverse children and you yourself was diagnosed with ADHD as an adult, and which I completely understand because I also fall into that category. So
it's pretty obvious, isn't it?
Just at the rate that we talk and we get excited and, right?
Oh, look, something shiny.
Yeah. And I'm the same way as you. I'm following. I'm like, okay, Deadpool and City Slickers. I'm following along with you and on everything that you're saying. So yes. And I love being ADHD too. Does it have some drawbacks to it? Sure it does, but I love it. And I see it as a positive thing, but I think there are so many children, students, young adults out there who I'm sure as you experienced in school, you get a lot of negative messages because mm-hmm. your brain takes in things differently. So I was curious if you wouldn't mind sharing with my listeners, maybe some of what you experienced yourself when you were in school You always have great ideas. You have a great perspective on how the brain works, how to really shape it to make actions and to make changes in your life. So tell me a little bit about your journey as it relates to being a student yourself who had ADHD, not knowing it, maybe how that even contributed to where you are now and what that journey looked for, like for you as a student. And then if you wouldn't mind sharing too, what that journey is looking like for your children right now as being neurodiverse in the school setting.
And so there's probably a reason why I have degrees in physics and communication and finance and psychology and martial arts and all these different areas. And I cross-pollinate from them, which is one of the things that people don't realize, that even though you have all these different rabbit holes that I went down and studied and pursued because it was interesting, thanks to my mom actually encouraging that. My mom was an educator, and as she always said, and she quoted Mark Twain, never let school interfere with your education.
Oh, I love that.
So she, like, if you want to go study that, fine, here's a bug jug, hey, I'll get you a chemistry set. She never got me my chemistry set, by the way, which is probably the reason why I went to work for the Department of Defense making big weapons, because she never gave me my chemistry set.
So you did it a different way.
Yeah, so I did it my way. It's like in NCIS where Gibbs goes back and, he sees his dad and the shotgun's up there and he's like, oh yeah, you don't give a kid a rifle and so he becomes a sniper. Yeah, you don't give a kid a chemistry set. He designs weapons for the government. So, and yes, I'm ADHD, obviously, squirrel. But so one of the things is that knowing that I have this, I don't want to say lack of attention, but this capability for immense multitasking, and I switch gears wickedly quick. I mean, there is no switching friction when I shifting between one thing and another like a lot of other people have. So that allows me to be able to go bing, 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 bing. So I actually take advantage of that. So one of the things that I'll do is, like, if I'm writing, I will set a timer using the Pomodoro method. So I'll set a timer for 20 minutes. I'll just focus and hammer on that. If I'm writing, I'll even go into, I'll turn off the internet. So I'm just creating as opposed to researching. I use the mini task list, things like this. So things like that, I understand what I need to do. Actually, when I was an undergrad, I was taking an astrophysics class with a couple of buddies, and my friend Tom Panuti, now Dr. Tom Panuti, brilliant, brilliant astrophysicist, he and Andrea would basically be like, okay, Joe, focus. Look at us. Tell us how to solve the problem, and we'll do the math. I'm like, okay, this is blah, 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 blah. I boom, and you start hearing do this, I boom, and I just disappear again. And they would actually go and crunch the math around it because I had the capability of getting the insight of how the thing worked, but not the necessarily discipline to sit there and do calculation after calculation after calculation. And so we assembled this team where they actually enjoyed that component, and I would have the insight. I'd show them this is how I derived solving this problem. Now you go do it. And so they were able to learn from that. And I remember when I took a nuclear reactor analysis class, I got like a perfect score. It was my first nuclear engineering class. I didn't even have the background to take this. And the professor, Dr. Clint Ballinger, who's still a good friend to this day, is like, how did you figure that out? I'm like, I thought like a neutron. He's like, oh, okay.
Love that. I love it because it shows to me, and hopefully to my listeners, especially those of us who have ADHD, is that even though you said that your brain wasn't maybe had the patience for those calculation pieces, your brain was still such an essential component to that team that you had, because your brain was what helped your team members get to the point where then they could do what they had interest in or what they were capable of. And I think so many youth with ADHD just feel like something's wrong with me, that I'm not capable. But when they can get into an area where they have intense interest, they really do shine, and they are able to do, like how you said, I just thought like a neutral, like you were able to really get your brain to think a certain way. And
Albert Einstein said that if we, based intelligence on the ability to climb trees, fish would go through life thinking they were stupid. So, I know what my limitations are. So like my worst class when I was doing my MBA was accounting, because it's like, oh, this sucks. So, you know, I told the professor, I'm just going to hire somebody to do this. That's what, you know, finance guys do. And he got a good laugh out of it. But I ended up getting together on a team with other people who had that detail orientation. And so it is one of the things, like in business, people who are great on the sales end of things are rarely good on paperwork or good on, you know, the detailed analysis stuff. And so you having the proper wingman or wingwoman who complements you, but can also deal with you, as Tara used to say about me, my assistant, you know, is that you understanding yourself and building your team around it to take advantage of your unique capabilities. And it's differences sell. It is not that everybody's exactly alike. They get forgotten. They don't have success. It is the person who is just on the edge, but can be close enough to what is still considered normal to be able to really push the boundaries, where it's science, art, music, business. And so being able to play with your unique capabilities, but have somebody or a team around you that can then translate that into reality, that's where you're going to see the greatest success.
Now, let me ask you, I feel like so many youth with ADHD, if they know it or they don't know it, are oftentimes masking those insecurities that they feel because they recognize that my brain is working differently. Oftentimes they get messages in school of thinking like, if you're not trying hard enough, you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. And I think when you get put into groups, oftentimes people with ADHD are so busy trying to mask the inefficiencies that they think they have, even though we know that they don't. Where did you find that confidence or that ability to realize, here's where I'm really good and I can bring other people in?
I didn't care. I wanted to be a pirate when I was 10 years old, and I still want to be a pirate. My friends from school like still make fun of me and they send me pirate stuff. I just turned 50. So, you know, Jimmy Buffett wrote the song, A Pirate Looks at 40, and then he changes it, A Pirate Looks at 50. So that's me. Okay, and I'm going to be that way. And the pirate sets, the captain sets direction. He has the quartermaster or quartermistress who focuses on the details of running the ship, and everybody works together, and then everybody participates in the spoils and the booty. So having that sort of attitude of, we're going to build a team. So my youngest is ADHD and on the autism spectrum. And he says that autism is his superpower. He's a mutant. And he's got no problem with it. And so I talked to him about the X-Men then. Okay, you know, there's all these different mutants and they have different powers. And what they need to do is they need to work together to draw from the strengths of each to make the team better than the individuals. So, you know, you have Colossus, who's, you know, huge and strong and all that. You got Wolverine, who's fierce and a fighter. And what does Colossus do? He picks him up and he throws him. They call it a speedball special, and allows them to extend their reach and be able to do these other things. You've got Jean Grey, who's a psychic who can communicate with everybody. So you've got Cyclops, who's got energy eyes, essentially. So he can, you know, long range and power and things like this. So just like them, or just like the Avengers, where you have different skill sets, you need to understand your skill sets and be able to work together to maximize the performance. So this comes back to what Sun Tzu said 2,500 years ago. He who knows his enemy himself will ever be victorious. So understanding your strengths, your weaknesses, how you learn, having that metacognitive awareness, which is something that kids with autism take a little while to develop because they're not getting social cues. But if you can work with them and guide them, they actually can become and overcompensate for it because they learn to assess others and themselves better and integrate. So don't hide your gifts. Don't, you know, pretend you're not mutant. Just say, yep, I am, and this is the way it is. This is my strengths, this is my weaknesses, and I'm figuring out how to operate my brain and my body to be able to maximize team performance.
I think that's an amazing message. And so let me ask you with that then, do you feel like because you had that confidence, because it didn't bother you how others would see or view you, how do you feel like your peers responded to you by you being you? Because I think that's what holds a lot of youth back, is they're just so afraid that their peers will, you know, they don't want to be different or seem different or viewed as different. It's like this massive fear that I see in a lot of the youth that I work with. How did your peers react to your saying, nope, this is me, this is how I work?
And So a lot of people, like in my regular school, thought I was a weirdo, but I quickly realized who you define as your peer is who you're going to benchmark against. So I was lucky that I went to the Johns Hopkins University CTY program relatively early. So I completely changed who my peers were from just all the kids in my normal high school. Yeah, I competed against them athletically, but my peers were these, you know, higher end individuals. As I became a martial artist, you know, I realized my peers were not just, you know, the kid, you know, sitting on the couch eating Cheetos. My peers were other martial artists or other runners, or, you know, as I got into financial services, it was other people, not just doing the basic things, but the people who were pursuing their CFP and the elites. And so you change who you define your peer group as. And that's one of the things that I want to tell kids early on. You know, your peer group is not every other 15-year-old, because that's just looking at a very broad group. You should benchmark against other people who have the same sort of drive and desire that you do. So if you're completely lacking in desire, you want to sit on the couch, or as my one son calls it, energy saver mode all the time, then fine. Okay, benchmark against those. But if you're a high intelligent, high driven individual, you're very high in conscientiousness and openness, then benchmark against those people. So I don't consider my peers to be the people that I grew up with. My peers are like, you know, my friends who are in special forces, my friends who have PhDs, my friends who I went to business school with. So when you start looking at who you call as your peers, it gets narrower and narrower in terms of the group that you would identify with. And so you need to then compare yourself among them as opposed to the entire world, because, you know, there's 7.5 billion of us. I don't care about, you know, what a 24-year-old whose biggest goal in the world is to be a TikTok star cares. Sorry.
I'm with you. I think that's the new aspiration for whatever reason, because
that's, if you're a 17-year-old that is very visual and creative and that's where you want to be, okay, that's your peer group. Learn how to be accepted by them and also to stand out from them with
and
your
let me ask you,
capabilities.
Do you feel like, I think that's the thing that youth are so scared of, is that stand out piece. And I'm always trying to send that message. So I think the more people who can send that message about standing out. So tell me, when you say stand out, what would you say to a youth who's trying to not stand out, or is trying to be like every other peer, even though that they are have these special gifts or capabilities that they're hindering?
And it took me a while to realize this, but if you're going to be like everybody else, you're going to be like everybody else. 75% of Americans are unhappy with their job. Want to be just like them? You know what? At this point, 70% of Americans are overweight or obese. Want to be like them? Or do you want to be special? You've got special gifts. Do you want to use them and be special? Or do you want to be like everybody else? And what's going to happen is, over time, you're going to realize that you do think differently, you process differently, your expectation is different. So you should be different. As Dr. Seuss said, you can't be number one if you're not on.
I like that. And I feel like your work really helps kind of set a foundation for the message that I want my listeners to understand. And I want them to learn about the things that they are capable. That's my biggest message, is that everybody can learn. I think there's a lot of children, especially neurodiverse children, who get those negative messages, who leave high school and then have to spend the next decade of their life rebuilding that confidence back up and being like, huh, maybe I'm smarter than I realized. Huh, maybe I am more capable than I thought. And then they're 30, 35 before they go, oh, wait, I have all these gifts and these talents that I can use. And given that, I feel like your work right now very much aligns with allowing them to start that foundation and start to grow upon that with these micro steps that you talked about. Tell my listeners, if they wanted to learn more about you, about your work, if they wanted to be able to reach out to you, what would be the best way for them to be able to do that?
The best way actually is go to the website, everyday-excellence.com. That's everyday-excellence.com. Because there's the microblogs, the Espresso of Excellence, as I call it. There's the podcasts. We're putting up the YouTube link, so they'll be able to get the YouTube channel, there'll be the Twitter feed, so they can see all that. So it's one resource for the entire environment. But you were just talking about something, Kristen, that really struck a chord in terms of the confidence. And so if I were to talk to other parents of neurodiverse kids, what I would tell them is get your kids into martial art, whatever martial art makes sense for them. I don't care if it's judo, taekwondo, tai chi, or whatever. Find an art where the instructor knows how to work with kids like yours. So like my youngest, his instructor, and I'm a master, but I don't train my own kids. I found somebody else. Master Torre is extremely good. And he keeps telling them, focus and finish, focus and finish. In fact, I quoted him in the book because it's such a great idea. So he's very good at working with neurodiverse children. But over time, the child will develop confidence in themselves and their capability. And it comes from repetitive work and overcoming obstacles and all this. And having older kids who are more experienced to model off of. So it gives them all these different things that help them. But there is nothing that builds confidence more than having the physical capability that comes from martial arts study. And it's not just the physical study, you're studying yourself and your boundaries and learning how to work your body and your mind and push yourself. So having that component is probably the single best thing other than encouragement to allow these neurodiverse kids to grow and thrive.
You know, it's so funny. I don't know that I ever put two and two together, but I myself growing up was very heavily involved in Taekwondo. I got to the black belt level. I went to camp every summer. And not until you're sitting here thinking about it or talking about it, and am I thinking like, wow, you know, I never realized that that was something that was very impactful on me and my life when I did it. And then it did provide me with a lot of confidence. So, you know,
being ADHD, having Taekwondo, that focus and finish, that I'm going to do this form. I'm going to break this form down to the basic parts and then rebuild it up. I'm going to do my 100 punches. You know, I'm going to get through this next thing. And you learn that focus in the martial arts that you can then apply into these other areas. And even those of us who are off the chart in terms of our energy levels and the ADHD in terms of our mind races, it teaches us to slow down and complete and all that. And so it's one of those skill sets that we can then apply in multiple different areas of our lives.
No, I love that. I never had thought about that. So I'm with you. I encourage that.
I had a good idea for the day.
Right. We got to celebrate them when we get them right. But I hadn't never thought about it that way. And it really did make a huge difference. And you're right. So I encourage your endorsement there of how impactful martial arts can be, and not just for that focus piece, but I think you're right, that confidence piece as well. And that's even a piece of confidence as an adult now who hasn't practiced in a really long time. I still have that level of confidence knowing that I have that knowledge and those components in my life. So I'm right there with you that I think that is a critical piece for youth, especially our neurodiverse youth to get involved in.
And as I say, I wear my black belt on my soul. You can't take that away, what I went through to earn it and all that. The skill sets, the mindsets will always remain, even if some of the physical capabilities change over time as we age or stop training or get injured or what have you. But it is that respect for others. Mm-hmm. It is that understanding that hard work translates into success. It is all of these different lessons that they carry forward with them for the rest of their lives.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I have one last question for you, Joe. And my question for you is, if you could send a message to students or young adults, because I really like to hit on the young adults too, who maybe struggled in school, who didn't do well and are still trying to find their way right now. But so students who are struggling or young adults who are struggling, maybe they didn't do great with school. Maybe they're really having a hard time finding their path right now. What would be a message you would like to give to them for them to understand what they're actually capable of academically or socially, emotionally? What would be your message to them?
So I've got, as I said, teenage boys. And so, of course, they play video games. And I played Dungeons & Dragons growing up and all that. So look at life like a giant video game. Your goal is to get to whatever castle's there, beat the boss, you know, save the princess, win the treasure, slay the dragon, all that sort of stuff. And to get to that point, that you're trying to get to. It's not a straight journey. You're not just going to get on this road, go 200 miles, knock on the castle door, and be admitted. So you're going to have to take all these side quests. So that's your main quest that you're focused on. And you need to figure that out over time, what that main quest is. But all these side quests, you know, it might be you go into the tavern and talk with the weird old man. That's me. That's what we're doing right now, talking to the weird old man in the tavern to get some insight. It might be that you take a side gig where you need to earn some gold to be able to do stuff. It might be that you go on this little mini game and you learn something that can help you out, or you get a relationship with a potential ally, or you're getting these bits of knowledge. And the example I use is Steve Jobs taking a calligraphy course after he dropped out at Bard College, which led to all the great fonts that we now have today because he took that little side quest. So you're going to have all these side quests that, looking back, you can realize how much they helped you. So don't call them failures. Call them side quests, learning opportunities, you know, side gigs, what have you. Explore all these things. Try and figure out where your main quest is. Move in the general direction of it, because your vision will get better as you approach it and you'll figure that out. But don't be afraid to fail. This is one of the things that, as the former gifted child, you know, it's always like, okay, you need to get 100 on these things and all this. And it's like, no, you need to start figuring out and understanding and realizing that failure is actually one of the best learning methodologies. If it's not fatal, it's fixable. Okay, so make mistakes, as Thor says in Ragnarok. I make grave mistakes all the time. Seems to work out. Look at them as learning opportunities. Look at them as ways to get new knowledge, new understanding of yourself and the world around you, new allies, great stories that you can tell down the road of some of these spectacular failures that I've had. Look at all these things to make you a better version of you. And that will help you be able to get through this. So, you know, even if you think that you failed because you didn't get the PhD at 22 like everyone expected you to, or you realize that you were fascinated by this one particular subject that might not necessarily be incredibly lucrative in today's market, that's okay. Study around it, find other things, build your unique capabilities, be in that video game, because we all have different skill sets. We all become different character classes. We all do different things, but in the end, you can still ultimately win.
I love that. And I love what you're saying about failure, because that's one of the biggest messages I like to promote to our youth, is that failure is not necessarily a negative thing. It's a way to learn and to build. So I'm glad that you reiterated that in your message.
I mean, my second favorite GIF to use is Chow from The Hangover. But did you die? No? Okay. Dust yourself off and keep going.
I love that. I love that. Well, before we go, Joe, please, is there anything that I didn't get a chance to ask you, or for an opportunity for you to share, that you can share with our listeners before we go?
So go to the website, check it out. There, as I said, there's all sorts of resources there. I'm not going to try and pound on you and buy my book or anything like that, because I don't know how to show or sell that way. But, you know, go use these resources to help yourself. And for you and everybody else, all that I wish upon you is to be excellent and grow today.
I love that. Well, I definitely see myself reading the book, because I think the message that you have, especially for people who are neurodiverse, who often feel overwhelmed by the ideas of making change or having to take on new tasks, I think you have really boiled it down to a science of how just little small integrations can make a big difference in your life. And so it doesn't have to feel like this overwhelming task. And I think that's important for people with ADHD to know and hear, that you can still be successful with those micro steps. It doesn't have to be this massive change all at once. So I love it. So thank you so much for your time today, Joe. I really appreciate it. This has been very valuable.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm glad I was able to help your people.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much.